All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Chaf Zayin. We are picking up on Chaf Vav Amud Beis 26b. A lot to do today, Baruch Hashem. Our shir this morning is dedicated by our Talmud Torah sponsors of the month of Cheshvan, Adam Yudit Ben Zev, Le'ilui Nishmas, Adam's grandfather Moshe David Ben Shalom, in honor of his grandmother Helen Nachman, his parents Eli and Judy Ben Zev, for serving as incredible role models. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant them Arichos Yamim Vishanim. And with that, let us begin. So we left off mid-story yesterday in Chafav HaMabez. Let's just pick up with the story again, if that's all right. So we left off Shmuel, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17 lines up from the bottom. Shmuel v'talmidei de Rav Rav Yehuda. So we'll say Shmuel, the students of Rav and Rav Yehuda. Haba Yosvi, we're sitting together. Chalif v'azu Rav Yosef b'reid Rav Menashe midvio la'apayu. So Rav Yosef b'reid Rav Menashe from Divio walked in front of them. Now when he walked, bali v'asi. So we'll say he walked by very quickly, or he was walking by, but he was going to walk by very quickly. Amar, they said, Asi lan gavra, diramina li begila dichitasa, umrami mimitri. So they felt that his display of walking by quickly, right, was a lack of respect. Kind of was gaiva, right? They felt it was gaiva. So what did they say? Literally translated, in front of us comes a man who ultimately, when you ask him a question as small as the kernel of grain, right? He goes in and he covers his mouth because he doesn't know what to say. So in other words, what they were saying is, he's walking by with such haste, like he's such a big tam chacham, but he doesn't know all that much. As right after they finished saying this. So ultimately, again, Rav Yosef came by. Amar li Shmuel, and Shmuel said to Rav Yosef, my Amar Rav Bishalya. Say, what was Rav's thing when it comes to Shai? So let's remember again, specifically speaking about the idea. Remember, we saw yesterday that a discussion about what happens if the Shalya, the afterbirth, doesn't come out with the Vlad, but comes out sometime afterwards. So do we attribute that Shalya that comes out afterwards to the baby that came out, in which case it's all part of the same thing? Or do we talk about the possibility that maybe that Shalya actually belongs to another baby, to another fetus, in which case, again, she will have effectively given birth to two babies? So the Gemara says, Amar Lei Haki Amar Rav, this is what Rav said, In Tolinas HaShalya, Ela B'davar Shal Kayama. So we'll say, so first of all, Rav said in general, we only go ahead and literally attribute the Shalya to a viable fetus. In other words, only if the fetus hadn't been carried full term and then been born. If that fetus would have been viable, we attribute the Shalya to that. But I will say, for example, if you have a Shalya that comes out after some other thing that she expels, like the sandal, so we do not attribute the Shalya to that particular sandal. So the Gemara says, Shailinu Shmuel l'chol tamidi d'Rav. So Shmuel asked all the tamidim of Rav who were sitting there also. So Amrilei Hachi, and Shmuel said, yes, indeed. Excuse me. And all the tamidim of Rav said, yes, this indeed is the statement of Rav, that you only attribute a shalya to what could have been a viable fetus. Hadr Chazi Rav Yehuda Bishos. So we'll say, apparently after this, Rav Yehuda looked at Shmuel angrily. Shmuel looked at Rav Yehuda angrily, because he was upset that Rabbi Yehuda did not communicate to him the proper sheet of Rav. Okay? But I mean, Rabbi Yosef ben Shom may Rabbi. So Rabbi Yosef ben Shom asked the following question of Rabbi. Hamapeles demus orev v'shalya mahu. So listen to this. If a woman expels something that looks like a raven, so it has the appearance of a raven, and what happens? And then there is an afterbirth, there's a shalya that comes with that afterwards. So we'll say, what is the halacha? Do we assume that shalya is part of that thing that looks like the raven, or is it something different? Amrlei, in Tolin Ella B'davar Sheish B'mino Shalya. So this is actually very interesting. So Rebbe said, the only time you could attribute the Shalya to the birth is when the birth looks like something that would normally have a Shalya. So we'll say, remember again, so for example, birds obviously do not have an afterbirth, do not have a placenta, because they lay eggs. So we'll say, so interestingly enough, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is as follows. You could attribute the shalya to the thing that is born, even if the thing that's born doesn't necessarily look like a human baby, as long as what it looks like is the type of species that has a shalya. But in this case over here, apparently because it looked like an orev, you cannot attribute the shalya to that. Kshura ba'o mahu, we'll say what happens if the shalya is tied to the thing that she expels. Right, so we'll say, so what happens over there? I mean, we'll say in this case over here, so in case number one, the orev came out, and then sometime afterward, the shalya came out. What happens if the shalya is literally attached, it's tied to the orev? Can you then go ahead and attribute it to the orev? Amalei, davar she'eno sha'alta. So this is interesting. He said, you asked me an impossible case. This would never happen. Which is fascinating, consider the fact that so often in Gemara, we deal with cases that'll never happen. But he said over here, the metzias that you're asking about never came up. Esei says, okay, well, that's interesting, because this is a case. Hamapelis min behema chayiv ofa shalye ma'in. If woman gives birth, woman expels. Suddenly it looks like a behema, a chaya, and an of. But shalye imahin. And there is an afterbirth together with that which she is expelling. So Bosse says, remember, the fundamental shayla is, how do you view the shalya? Do we assume that the shalya is part of that which she expelled? Or can we make the assumption that maybe the shalya actually represents what? Another potential fetus that she had. So the Gemara says, it depends. When the shalya ultimately, again, is attached. When the shalya is attached ultimately to that which is being expelled in choshesh and levlad acher, then we're not choshesh that the shalya represents another vlad. Rather, we assume that the shalya is part of the fetus that came out. Ein shalya kshurimon, but we'll say if the shalya is not attached to the thing that looks like a behema, chaya, and an oaf, then what? Choshesh and levlad acher. So then we'll say we would assume that in fact the shalya can actually be representative of another fetus. So the Gemara says, "Hareini matil alein chomer shnei vlados." And Abba says, in that case over here, therefore, where the shalya is not attached. So remember again, Abba says it's a very specific case. She is expelling something that looks like a behema, a chaya, or an oaf. So now what we're saying is like this: if the shalya is attached, then we assume the shalya is part of that which is being expelled. If the shalya is not attached, then ultimately, again, we assume it is not part of that which is being expelled. If that's the case, then what do you have over here? Harini matil alein chomesh shnei vlados. Therefore, you would treat this woman as if what? As if she had given birth twice. In other words, that we would count that which she expelled as a birth and the shalya as the potential of a second birth. Rabbi, remember, again, this goes back to what we said before in the Mishnah, that, again, whenever there's a shalya, we assume that what? There's what? That there's a fetus, there's a vlad as well. So again, if the shalya is good. So the Gemara says, "Shani Omer Shema Nimuach Shafir Shal Shalya, V'Nimuach Shalya Shal Shafir." Because we also say maybe what happened is as follows: maybe the placenta of that which she expelled dissolved, and maybe the fetus inside the placenta that came out ultimately dissolved as well. Therefore, maybe Halacha L'Maaseh said she actually had two births here, to which the Gemara says, Tuyufta. So indeed, you refuted that which Rebbe said, because Rebbe said, there's no such case of a woman who expels something that looks like a raven that would have a shalya attached to it. To which the Gemara says, not true. The metzias can happen. Good. So, Amar Rav Arashila, Amar Rav Masna, Amar Shmuel. Maisa, v'talu as ha-shalya bevlat ad asar yamis. So now I'm supposed to bring down some fascinating cases. It once happened that a woman gave birth. Rabbi said, listen to this case. A woman gave birth, and she expects something, whatever the mice is. Now, also, just to point out, whenever you see the Lashon of Vlad, right, so Vlad often means that she gave birth to a living baby. So what happens? So she goes in and she gives birth, and then a shalya comes out 10 days later. Up 10 days later. And I will say, they still attributed that shalya to that Vlad, to that baby. So I will say, v'lo amru tolin ela b'shalya haba achar ha-vlad. And I will say, when do we say this? We only say this ultimately again. We only say this in a sit. Look at Rashi. Aval achar ha-vlad, Rashi says, aval yotzes ha-shalya kodem choshishin la-achar. So I will say, so this is actually interesting. So apparently in this type of situation where the shalya comes out after the Vlad, right, even 10 days later, we would assume that ultimately, again, this shalya belongs to this Vlad. Now, both say, now understood, now understand, Rashi just points out over here, if the shalya came out before the Vlad, then Rashi points out, we would assume that that shalya actually belongs to a different fetus, not to the baby that comes out. But if the shalya comes out afterwards and the baby was, the Vlad come out, even 10 days later, we could attribute that shalya to that Vlad that came out. Amar Rabbi Achana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Maisa, listen to this. V'talu es ha-shalya b'vlad ad chaf gimel yamim. So the Gemara is like, we're bringing up like the most extreme cases. There was once a time when a woman gave birth, and then afterwards, what happened? 23 days later, the shalya came out, and they still attributed that shalya to that baby. To that baby that came out. Amar Rav Yosef, ad chaf dalar amartalan. The history of Yosef, Rebbe, you thought it wasn't 23 days, it was 24 days. Okay, good. Amar Rav Achabri, Rav Avira, Amar Rav Yitzchok, Maisa v'nishta ha-vlad achar chavero lamed gimel yom. So we'll say this is wild. So one time it happened that a woman apparently was carrying twins. So we'll say, so what happened? She delivered the first baby, and the second baby came out 33 days later. 33 days later. So say, I just want to point out over here, the Gemara is not talking about like brises. The Gemara is talking about what? Cases that occurred. So this is actually quite amazing. So somehow the case occurred. Amar le Rav Yosef, la medalera martlas. What's Rav Yosef? It was always that guy in the base medrash, right? So is that right? It wasn't 33 days, it was 34 days. Okay, fine. Thinking about Rav Yosef, says 34 days. So let's analyze this. So hanicha, so we'll say here, the Gemara is going to touch on an interesting machlokes that we are going to actually discuss in, what does it say? It's la medches mu days. So we'll discuss at the end of next week. Or the following week. So let's listen to this. So this notion, by the way, of one baby being born on one day and another baby being born 33 days later. So we'll say, this is interesting. Hani chalaman damar, yoledes letisha yoledes lemikutan. So we'll say, we're going to get into something fascinating, which was that halacha lemaisa, Chazal's understanding of the gestation period. So we're going to see that in the view of Chazal, there were almost like two times during pregnancy where a woman had a chance of giving birth to a healthy baby. One was during the 9th month, one was during the 7th month. It's interesting that the 8th month they felt was like a critical time for the baby to be born. So I'll say, so again, remember, reflecting of what was considered to be the norm at that time. So the Gemara says, this makes sense. The notion that you could have two babies 33 days apart makes sense if you hold. Yoledes letisha, that if a woman gives birth in the 9th month, yoledes lemekutan, that she could give birth into the 9th month and not a full 9 months. So I'll say, so what could have happened then with these two babies? What could have happened was as follows. Mashkachos la'echad nigmarat tziras l'sof shiva, ve'echad nigmarat tziras l'tchilas tisha. So also you could have had this following situation. One baby essentially was born at the end of the 7th month, and the other baby was born at the beginning of the 9th month. So essentially they're twins, just one is born at the end of the 7th month, one is born at the beginning of the 9th month, and that would make them 33 days apart. But according to the opinion of holds, that halacha lemaisa, a woman who gives birth on the 9th month goes the full 9 months, then ultimately again, ma'ika lemeimar. So how would you have this situation where the babies are 33 days apart? To which the Gemara says, in that case, epoch shmaisisa. Switch around the rulings. Lamed gimel l'shalya, chaf gimel l'vlad. They will say, in fact, the cases were different. The first case was where the baby came out, and the shalya came out 33 days later. And the case of the baby is where the baby came out 23 days later. How is this helpful? Look at Rashi. Epoch shmaisa Rabbi Yochanan. Chaf gimel l'vlad. Mishkachos la da'echad nigmarat tziras l'tchila zayin. Ve'echad l'sof zayin. D'lechuli amo yoled zayin yoled smikutar. So apparently, as we'll see, everyone agrees that a woman can give birth in the beginning of the 7th month and the end of the 7th month. Now, by the way, when you see when a woman can give birth, what it means is a woman can give birth anytime. What it means is, when could she give birth and have healthy babies? So there's machlokas in the 9th month, but apparently in the 7th month, a woman could give birth in the beginning of the 7th month and the end of the 7th month, and the baby could still be viable and healthy. That would be a case also where the babies could be 23 days apart. 23 days apart. One born in the beginning of the 7th month, one born at the end of the 7th month. Fine, Rabbi, we're going to get to that Yoledes Letisha, Yoledes Leshiva, Yoledes Lemekutan discussion. Amar Rav Menachem, Ish Kafar Sharim, from the Beis Sharim. Maisa, Venishta Vlad Achar Chavero, Gimel Chadoshim. But say one time it happened that a mother was their mother was pregnant with two babies, with twins, and one baby came out first, and the other baby came out 3 months later. Unless you think that this is impossible, Vaharihim Yoshvim Lefanela Bebeis HaMedrash. They're sitting right over there. Right? Who were they? Uman Ninhu, Yehuda V'chizkia B'nei Rabbi Chiya. So it's incredible. Right? So incredible. Right? They're sitting right here on the Beis HaMedrash. One was born 1 month, one was born 3 months later. Imagine walking around life, you know, with that, that's everybody knows you in the Beis HaMedrash. Okay, good. V'ha'amar. So we'll say 1 second. But so we'll say, now this is very interesting. So how would you have a situation where one baby is born, you know, where the babies are 3 months apart? So we'll say, so the Gemara assumes that the way that happens is the mother must have become pregnant with number two while she was already pregnant with number one. But the Gemara says, that's not possible. V'amarmar, eina isha misaberes v'chozeres misaberes. A woman can't become pregnant when she's already pregnant. To which the Gemara says, no, you're right. Amar Abaye, tipa achas haisa. Really, there was one tipa, which means Rabbo says she became pregnant once. Then ischalka l'shtayim. And ultimately, again, the one tipa of zera, the one tipa of semen split off into two. Which Rabbo says, so apparently the way it was twins, but something happened that one was born in 1 month and one was born 3 months later. Okay, v'nischalka l'shtayim echa nigmar atzrasel b'tchila zayin. We'll say one of the babies was born at the beginning of the 7th month, the echad b'sof tes, and the other baby was born at the end of the 9th month. So we'll say what's interesting about this over here, just so you understand, the Gemara is not talking about, like I said before, like a brisa, like a mishnah, like a shmaisa. So the Gemara is talking about something that happened. So whatever the metzias was, it happened that the sons of Rabbi Chiya, Yehuda, and Chizkiya were literally 3 months apart. Okay? Shalya babayis habayis tameh. So we'll say if there's a shalya in the home, so the home is tameh. Remember again, this was the Mishnah. Right? So remember again, so the Mishnah said, shalya babayis habayis tameh. If there's a shalya in the home is tameh. And the Mishnah said, lo shashaya vlad. It's not because the shalya is a baby, but rather it's because the Mishnah says there is no shalya without a vlad. Wherever there's a shalya, there is a vlad as well, and therefore again we just assume that the vlad dissolved, and therefore again there's tumas mace in the home. So turn rabbanon. So we'll say that's analyzed. Turn rabbanon. Shay babayis habayis tamei. If there's a shalya, bless you. If there's a shalya in the home, so the home is tamei. Lo shashalya vlad. We'll say it's not the pshat that the shalya itself is a baby. Ella she'in shalya she'in vlad ima. Rather, what it means is as follows: there is no shalya, which is not accompanied by vlad. I was supposed to say the existence of the placenta, right, of the shalya in and of itself is indicative that there was a baby. So, therefore, again, even if you can't find the baby inside of that shalya, it just means that it dissolved. So the Gemara is therefore there is Tomas Meis divrei Rabbi Meir. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Shabbos says, so fine. That's Rabbi Meir's statement. Ein shalya below vlad. Therefore, there is a shalya in the home, underneath the roof of the home. Halacha l'maisa, there's tumas mace in the home. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, mitarim. We'll say all of these other opinions, ultimately, again, are mitahir. So the Gemara says, Amrlo Rabbi Meir. So they said to Rabbi Meir, Ia tamoda. So remember again, in terms of the svara as to why they're matis. Remember again, only Rabbi Shimon is mentioned in the Mishnah. Right? Only Rabbi Shimon is mentioned in the Mishnah. And what does Rabbi Shimon's logic Rabbi say? So we'll see in the Gemara, but according to the Mishnah, what it sounds like according to Rabbi Shimon is the Vlad dissolved into the blood, right? Ultimately again of the Shalya. And therefore again, essentially according to Rabbi Shimon, the Vlad is batel berov. That was his logic. We're going to see exactly what that means, but that was his logic. There was a vlad. I mean, so also Rabbi Shimon doesn't disagree with the metzias. Wherever there's a shalya, there's what? There's a vlad. So what's happened over here? The vlad has dissolved into the shalya and has become batel berov. So the Gemara says as follows. So the Gemara says, "I'm a little Rabbi Meir." So we'll say all the rabbis said to Rabbi Meir. Remember, so Rabbi Meir is the one who says whenever there's a shalya, there's a vlad, and therefore there's tumas meis. So I said to Rabbi Meir, "Iata moda shimotziu b'safal beis achitzon shutar." This is Rabbi Meir. Don't you agree? So we'll say, imagine the following situation: there's a shalya in house number one. So I said to Rabbi Meir, "Don't you agree that if you take that shalya in a safal literally is a bowl, if you were to have that shalya inside of a receptacle, and you were to take the shalya to a different house, shehutahar, that ultimately, again, the shalya would not convey tumas meis in a second home, So Amar Lahen Aval. Rabbi Meir says, yes, I do agree with that. That if you transfer the Shalit to a second home, there would not be any Tumas Meis. So the Gemara says, Velama. So they said to Rabbi Meir, why is that? Lefisha Eino. Because ultimately, again, by the time you get the Shalit to the second house, there's no more Shalya. Yeah, I'm sorry, there's no more Vlad. There's no more Vlad. So Amar Lo. Kishem She'eino Bebeis Achitzon. Kach Eino Bebeis Apnimi. Said Rabbi Meir, exactly. Right? You're agreeing that Halach Lamaisa, the Vlad totally dissolved. Once it totally dissolved, it's Batel Barov. So if you agree with that, if you agree with that after you transfer it from house number one to house number two, you should agree with it when in house number one as well. So Amar Lahem, Tishrei may responded to them. No. Eino Doma Nimok Pam Achos LeNimok Beis Pamim. Literally, they both say you can't go ahead and compare something that was dissolved once to something that was dissolved twice. So we'll see what that means is as follows. Rameer seems to say like this. The act of transferring the shalya, right? When you transfer the shalya, there's movement of the shalya. Anytime you move the shalya, what ends up happening? That increases the dissolution of the fetus. So Rameer will say, when the shalya is born in the house and it's there, so I assume that ultimately, again, the Vlad is in there, right? And some part of the Vlad is in there, right? But when you move the Shalya, that movement ultimately causes the Vlad to dissolve. So Rabbi Meir will say that when it gets to that second home, even I will agree that it's Batel Barov, and therefore no Tumas Meis. So the Gemara says, Yasser Papa, Achori Dirav Bibi, Kamei Dirav Hamnuna. Okay, so just follow this. So Rav Papa is sitting behind Rav Bibi, who's in front of Rav Hamnuna, the Yosef Vika'amar, and he sat and he said as follows. My time is Rabbi Shimon. What's Rabbi Shimon's logic? So let's remember again. So we just went through Rabbi Meir, right? So Rabbi Meir holds Ein Shalya below Vlad. That's his idea. Wherever there's a Shalya, there is always a fetus. And because of that, therefore, again, the Shalya itself, the Vlad inside of the Shalya, ultimately goes ahead and conveys Tumas Meis. Exception to that rule is what? If you move the Shalya, the act of movement hastens the dissolution, and therefore, again, does not convey to a Tumas Meis. That's Rabbi Meir. What's Rabbi Shimon's logic? My time to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is very similar. It's like, Kasavar, kol tumashin is ariv ba mimin acher betela. So we'll say, this is very interesting. Rabbi Shimon says, anytime you have a davar hatameh that something gets mixed into, introducing some type of foreign substance into a davar hatameh, ultimately, again, is mevatel the davar hatame. In other words, a tummy substance will only convey tuma if it's quote unquote pure. If you introduce some type of foreign substance into that davar hatuma on that davar hatame, it will no longer convey tuma. We're going to look at Rashi in just a moment. Mimin acher afilu mimin tuma im eino shavala betela. So we'll say, so therefore again, he says, kol tuma shin is ariba mimin acher betela. So we'll say, this is an incredible concept. So according to Rabbi Shimon, if you have an item that conveys tuma, that item only conveys tuma, it's in its pure form. If you mix in some type of foreign substance to that davar hatame, the davar hatame becomes batal. So amr lehu, Rav Papa, Hainu nami ta'amaihu de Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Yossi. So we'll say, listen to this. So ultimately, again, so Rav Papa chimed in over here, and he said, this is also the logic for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. So remember again, in the way the Gemara presented these opinions is, it was Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara said, what's the svar of Rabbi Shimon? Why does Rabbi Shimon say that the Shalya ultimately does not convey Tumas Meis? Because Rabbi say, even if Rabbi Shimon agrees that there's a Vlad there, because the Vlad is dissolving into the dam of the Shalya, there's a foreign substance mixed into the Vlad, therefore the Vlad no longer has the ability to convey Tumah. So Rabbi Papa says, oh, by the way, that's also the svara for Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. To which the Gemara says, Achikwale, they laughed at Rav Papa. Maishna Pshita. Or as Rabbi say, remember again, Rav Papa says, oh, by the way, what you just said about Rabbi Shimon, that is also the logic ultimately of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Huda. So they laughed at Rav Papa. We'll say, of course, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Huda, and Rabbi Shimon are one unit. So when we ask, what's the svara of Rabbi Shimon? We're asking, what's the svara of the unit? Rav Papa comes along and says, oh, by the way, that's also the position of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Yossi. So they laughed at Rav Papa. They said, like, what do you, of course, that's obvious. Why do you have to chime in about that? So let's listen to this. Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa said, I want to teach you an important lesson. Afilu ki hamilsa lein inish. It's important to speak up in the Beis Medrash. Why? Velo nishtok kamei rabbe. And I will say it's important not to be silent when you learn. Mishum shenamar, because the pasuk says over here, im navalta behisnase vim zemosa yad lepeh. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, velo lishtok, Rashi says, well, first of all, lema inish, dilma mitoch tvar of amri leitaimo, velo lishtok, velema misaber nale. So I say, so a person should always make sure that he understands something, ultimately, again, by asking questions. Because if you don't ask questions, Rashi says, quoting the pasuk, im navalta, atzmichal devei Torah, sofach leisnasi. I say, ultimately, again, if you go ahead and navalta means, literally means like you debase yourself, which means if you're willing to go ahead and ask questions, even though you run the risk that what? That your question might be an obvious and foolish one, say, im navalta, behisnasi. If you're willing to take the risk of looking foolish in the pursuit of learning, you will be uplifted. V'im zamosa yad lepeh. But if you are quiet, right? If you are quiet, then ultimately, again, your hand will be over your mouth and you will not know how to answer questions. So the idea that Rav Papa was saying is, I knew it was obvious. I kind of just wanted to confirm that which was obvious to everyone else. And if you don't ask, you don't learn. Incredible. So Gemara goes right there. And I will say that this is really fascinating. And just Gemara wants to point out, Rabbi Shimon's Shita. So now the Gemara is espousing this idea that Rabbi Shimon's. So remember, a woman expels a shalya. The shalya is in the house. So what happens? Now Rabbi Shimon says that halacha lemaisa, there is no tumah. Why is there no? So remember, Rabbi Meir says, so now there's tumas meis in the house. Why? Because in shalya below vlad. The shalya is there. The vlad is there. The baby is there. Therefore, there's tumas meis. Rabbi Shimon says there's no tumah. Why is there no tumah? So now, I'll say we've espoused his logic. Because ultimately, again, even if you want to say there was a vlad there, that vlad is mixed in with other stuff. And anytime you have a davar hatame that is mixed together with a foreign substance, the davar hatame loses its ability to what? To convey tumah. So the Gemara says, by the way, this is not unique by Shalya. Va'azda Rabbi Shimon Latame, Desanya. We'll say first wide line, Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. Mole Tarva Drekev. So we'll say it's been a while, actually, since we've spoken about a ladle full of corpse dust. Right? Remember, back in our Chulin days, we spent some significant time on corpse dust. So I literally, we'll say, actually means like a spoonful or a ladle full of corpse dust. Remember, again, that is the sheer for corpse dust. It's not like a metaphor. It literally means dust from a corpse. So we'll say, so a little full of corpse dust, the akash is kaf, a spoonful. That is the shear in which corpse dust is able to convey to us. So watch this. So Mali Tarvad Rekev, Shenafa Lusocha Afar Kolshu. So we'll say, if you have a spoonful of corpse dust into which dirt got mixed in, so the Gemara says, Tame, it could still convey tuma. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Mitar. Rabbi Shimon says, ultimately it's tar. So my time with Rabbi Shimon. So we'll say, what's Rabbi Shimon's logic? And we already know. What's Rabbi Shimon's logic? What's his logic? Right? There's a foreign substance that's mixed in to the corpse dust. And as soon as you introduce a foreign substance into the corpse dust, ultimately the corpse dust loses its ability to convey tuma. So my time with Rabbi Shimon. Amraba ashkech sinu l'rabbanan debe rav. The Asi Vikamri, so we'll say I found the Tamidi Chama of the Yeshiva of Rav, who were trying to understand the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, and said as follows, listen to this. Yefsha shalo yir bushte predos afar apre de achas shal rakev. The chasile, because I also remember again, here's what I have in this case. I have a spoonful of corpse dust. We'll say, where are you getting corpse dust from? Where are you getting it from? It's important to know. From the corpse, well said, right? Right? Ross? From the ground, right? From the ground, Rabbo say. So therefore, again, what's the issue? What's the issue? Bepashtos, there's going to be some dirt that's mixed in. We'll discuss how you can get, if you're in the market for pure corpse dust, we're going to discuss how you can get that in just a moment. But lemaisa, again, you're getting it from the ground. You're getting it from the ground. So we'll say, what's going to happen? That means there's earth mixed in. So what's going to end up happening, says the Gemara, it's impossible that there's not some particle of corpse dust that doesn't have two particles of earth around it. We'll say, what happens if you have one particle of corpse dust surrounded by two particles of dirt? What happens? the particle of corpse dust is batal. They're both saying, I remember again, if the particle is batal, what does that mean? You don't have the requisite shear of corpse dust. Therefore, again, therefore the shear of corpse dust is deficient, and therefore aloch lemais doesn't convey tumah v'amimelo. I could say just the opposite. Adraba. But by that same token, I can reverse that. I can say, and I'm sure somewhere in this mixture, what's happening? You have two particles of corpse dust that are wrapping themselves around what? Around one particle of earth, and they're mevatel the earth and changing the earth ultimately again into corpse dust. Rather, Rava says like this. You're right. Rabbi Shimon. Say this is like Rabbi Shimon's logic. Sofo kitchilaso. The Rabbi was saying, the end of a davar hatame must be like the beginning of the davar hatame. Matchiloso naaselo davar acher. Gangilon, afsofo naaselo davar acher gangilon. The Rabbi was saying, just like in the beginning, the introduction of foreign substance becomes gangilon, literally means like a remedy, but we'll define what that means in just a moment. So too in the end, the introduction of foreign substance also becomes like a remedy. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Sofo shel rekev ketchilaso. You have to look at corpse dust in the end, like the beginning. Matchilaso kishen nikbar im yesh davar haray li rakev v'lasos rekev shomeis gangilon. Bitul shoso davar acher mevatlo. Af sof la'acher shenasa rekev kishen nikbar kilchaso. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rabbi Shimon said like this. Well, it's actually very interesting. If you bury a corpse in, let's say, clothing, or for that matter, tachrichim. So we'll say, so what happens when the corpse decomposes? What else decomposes? Ultimately, again, the tachrichim themselves, which means if you were to go back some number of years later and find corpse dust, is that corpse dust metame? And the answer is no. Why? Because we know that decomposition includes what? Decomposed tachrichim as well. So just like Rabbi said, Rabbi Shimon says like this, if when you bury the corpse, you bury it in a way that you know that the decomposed corpse will not just include physical material, but also external material. So Rabbi say, at the end, once you already have corpse dust, the introduction of any foreign substance ultimately goes in is mevatel. So Rabbi say, that's the svara. It's just a different way of saying the same thing. Essentially, anytime you have a davar atameh and something extraneous or foreign is introduced, that negates the ability of the davar hatameh to convey tumah. So just like if when you bury the person, you're burying them with foreign objects, and therefore Allah Kalamais, you know that when there's decomposition, that decomposition will include those foreign objects, and from the beginning, so I will say if you bury a corpse in something that is going to decompose with the corpse, from the beginning, you're never going to get a pure sample of corpse dust. So I will say, so too at the end, once you have corpse dust already, introducing foreign material ultimately prevents the corpse dust from conveying tumah. Rashi responds, Davar Acher Misarevis Bamevato V'Loshon Agilon Davar Omi Kinegdo Levatlo U'Lekalkolo. So I will say, good. So that's it. So the Gemara says, Maihi. So I'll say, what is this case? So I'll say, what does this mean? So I'll say, the Lashon of the interesting, that Sofo Kitchilaso, the end of the corpse dust is like the beginning of the corpse dust. What do you mean? What do you mean when you say the beginning of the corpse dust? Well, this is fascinating. Disanya, listen to this. Ezohu meis sheyesh lo rekev. Ve'ezohu meis shein lo rekev. So I'll say, here's what we know. Halach lemaisa, so what's the din by corpse dust? A spoonful of corpse dust ultimately conveys tumah. So the Gemara says, when do you have a situation where the mace is subject to corpse dust versus when it's not subject to corpse dust? So watch this. So the Gemara says, Ezu mace sheyesh lo rekev, ve'ezu mace shein lo rekev. Here we go. Nikbar arum ba'aron shal shayish o agabe ritzpa shal avanim. Zehu mace sheyesh lo rekev. So let's listen to this. If you bury the body unclothed in a casket of marble or on a stone floor, that is a case where what? Where ultimately, again, if you go back later after the corpse decomposes, the decomposition will be subject to loads of corpse dust. Why, Rabosai? Why? No foreign substance. Because remember, again, there's no clothing, therefore no clothing has decomposed. The casket has not decomposed because it is marble or the stone floor. Therefore, again, if sometime later on you go back and you get a spoonful of corpse dust, that is a pure specimen, and therefore Allah Kalamaisa will convey tumah. The Ezehu Meis, Shein Lo Rekev, will say, what's the case of a mace that is not subject to corpse dust? Nikbar Biksuso, if the corpse is buried in its clothing. Rabbi say, by the way, when we say its clothing refers to what? Any clothing, right? It's referring to any clothing, right? Even what we call tachrichim, oba aron shalates, or in a wooden casket, which itself, of course, decomposes, oa gabe rispa shalavenim, or on a floor of bricks, because Rabbi say the assumption is bricks also decompose. Zel mace she'en lo rakev. Rabbi say this would become a mace ultimately again that would not be subject to corpses. Rabbi says what the Gemara is saying over here is like this: sofo kitchilaso. The end of corpse dust is like its beginning. Just like from the beginning, if we bury the body in a way where we know that there's going to be foreign materials mixed in to the corpse dust, the corpse dust is not conveyed to Ma. So too at the end, Rabbi say, even if halacha l'maisa you manage to get a pure specimen of corpse dust, if it turns out that something else is mixed in now, even at the end, halacha l'maisa, the introduction of foreign material prevents the corpse dust from conveying to Ma. V'lo amru rekev, so Rabbi say, v'lo amru rekev elo l'mais bilvad. And this whole halacha of rekev, Rabbi say, only applies to what? Only applies to a corpse. L'me'ute harug delo. We'll say this comes to exclude, ultimately, again, a person who's killed, whose remains are not subject to the laws of corpse dust. Why not? Look at Rashi. La fuke harug delo, v'fi sheyatza damo b'chaso. So this is another interesting halacha. The din of corpse dust only applies to a body that was fully intact at the time of death. But for example, if a person was killed, so essentially if a person was killed, that means when they're buried, there's something that's missing. Either there's blood that's missing, there's a part of the body that's missing. So the Maisa, again, a person who's killed, that body is not subject to the halachas of corpse dust. Okay, good. But say, by the way, just so we keep our eye on the ball, I know it's easy to get carried away with corpse dust, but I just so we keep our eye on the ball over here. So let's say, so remember again, this is all coming up because of Rabbi Shimon's Shita by Shalya. Right? Rabbi Shimon's whole idea by Shalya is what? Is Shalya, even if you want to say that there is a Vlad or there was a Vlad in there, will not convey Tuma. Why? Because the Vlad can only convey Tumas Mace when? When you have a pure specimen. But if there's something mixed in with the Vlad, like in this case over here, the material of the Shalya, that prevents the Vlad from conveying any type of Tumah. That seems to be what the Svar is. We're going to challenge it in just a little bit. And that Sheet of Rabbi Shimon Rabbi say he holds it by Shai, but he also holds it by corpse dust. Therefore, again, Tchilaso Kisofo, just like if you start out in these other materials with the corpse, from the beginning, it's buried in a wooden casket, or it's wearing Tachrichim, assuming that when it decomposes, these other materials will be part of the decomposition. So too, even if you get a pure specimen of corpse dust, but you mix in something else there, for example, you mix in some earth, which Rabbi say could very easily happen when taking corpse dust, halacha l'maisa, the corpse dust will not convey tuma. Gufa, let's go back and analyze this. Malei tarvad rekev shenafal l'socha afra kol shu tamid. So we'll say if you have a ladleful, right, a spoonful of corpse dust, and some even small amount of dirt falls into that spoon. So we'll say, what's that halacha? Tame. So Tanakama holds that the corpse dust still has the ability to convey tuma. Rabbi Shimon matar. Rabbi Shimon says that it's tar. We'll say, again, what's the logic? Because the introduction of foreign material into the corpse dust, in this case the foreign material is the dirt, prevents the corpse dust from conveying tuma. Molei tarvad rekev shenes pazir babayis habayis tamei. So the Tanakhama says that if you have a spoonful of dirt, a spoonful of corpse dust, and that spoonful of corpse dust gets scattered in the home. So we'll say in this case over here, what you have is as follows. I have the shear of corpse dust, but the corpse dust is not concentrated. Instead, what ends up happening, I end up spreading it throughout the home, but it's all under the same roof. What's the halacha? Tame. Tanakhama says, ultimately, again, it is tame. It is tame. Right? They will say, why is it tame? Because of Tumas Ohel. Right? Because it's all under the same roof. Rabbi Shimon Matar. Rabbi Shimon ultimately says that it is tahor. To which the Gemara says, Utsricha, what are in both of these cases? Here we go. Diashmini kamaisa. Because if we would have just said the first case, the Gemara says, Bahikam Rabbanon, Mishum de Machnif. So you'll say, I would have said in the first case, the Rabbanon hold, that if you have a spoonful of corpse dust, even if a little bit of dirt gets mixed in, that corpse dust is still going to convey tuma. Why? Because the corpse dust is concentrated. However, again, Mishum de Machnif, Avan de Spazer, but if it's scattered, like in case number two, we'll say maybe scattered corpse dust, even though it's all under the same roof, Halach Lamaisa does not convey tuma. Say that ultimately they would agree with Rabbi Shimon that in order for corpse dust to convey tumah under a roof, the corpse dust must be together. But if it's scattered, the roof can't combine everything. The Rabbanon even hold that even with scattered corpse dust underneath one roof, the roof brings it together and conveys tumah. And if it would have just said the second case, which is the scattered corpse dust under one roof, we'll say in that case, Rabbi Shimon will say that the only way Tumas Ohel works for corpse dust is where? If all of the corpse dust is in one spoon. But in Lamaise, if it's scattered, the roof can't combine the various particles into one. Ava Baha, but maybe in the first case, right, where just a little bit of dirt gets mixed in, Ema Modul Rabbanon. I would have thought maybe Rabbi Shimon accused it to Rabbanon. Therefore, Tzicha. They will say both cases are necessary to teach Rabbi Shimon. This accused to Rabbanon both cases. Tanya Idach. So we'll say now another case, another Braisa. Very interesting. Mole Tarvad Va'od. Offer Rabbi Sakvaras Tamei. Rabbi Shimon Tarvad. Well, listen to this. What's this situation over here? Look at Rashi. Mole Tarvad Va'od. Yosere Male Tarvad Afra Be Sakvaras Lishnachrina Rekib Mamashlames Elakagon Shinikbar Biksuso Bekarka Belo Orange Shayish Veshka Male Tarvad Vaod Me Osa Afar Tavmaram. So listen to this case. I have a spoonful of corpse dust. In addition to the spoonful of corpse dust, what else do I have? Some of the dirt from the cemetery. Rashi points out, by the way, it doesn't have to be dirt from the cemetery. It could also be what? It could also be some of the decomposed dirt from the tachrichim or from the casket. But I will say what's interesting in this particular case over here is what? I have a full shear of a spoonful of corpse dust. I have the full shear. It's just in addition to my shear of corpse dust, what else do I have? What else do I have? Some other foreign material. So what's that, Lacha? Tamei. So we'll say, the Rabbanon say, ultimately it's Tamei. Why is it Tamei? Because you have a complete shear of corpse dust. Granted, you have other stuff mixed in, but we don't care about the stuff that gets mixed in. We're looking at the corpse dust. Rabbi Shimon, Mitar. Rabbi Shimon says it's Tar. My time in the Rabbanon. Why do the Rabbanon say that it's Tamei? Lefi shi efshar lemalei tarvad v'od afra beisakvaras. So I'll say ultimately the Rabbanan say like this: as long as you know that you have a spoonful of corpse dust, even if there's other stuff mixed in there, we don't care about that. As long as we know for sure that you have the spoonful of corpse dust, even if there's far material mixed in, you are good to go. So we'll say, so alocha lemaisa, the fundamental machlokes in Rav Shimon and the Rabbanan is as follows. The Rabbanan will hold that the introduction of far materials doesn't negate the ability of the spoonful of corpse dust to convey tumah. So the issue is, as long as you know that you have a complete spoonful of corpse dust, even if you have dirt in there or other decomposed materials in there, that's fine. Rabbi Shimon says no. In general, a davar hatame only has the ability to convey tumah if what? If it is a pure specimen. But once you have far materials mixed in there, that negates the ability of the davar hatame to convey tumah. Hashta the amrit time that Rabbi Shimon. Now we go full circle. Now that we've espoused the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, Mishum Sofot Kitchilaso, and I will say at least by the corpse dust case, because we say that literally the end of the corpse dust case is just like the beginning. Just like the beginning of Osai, if you want to know that you're going to have a spoonful of corpse dust, what do you have to do? You have to bury the body unclothed in a casket of marble or upon a stone floor. And anything other than that, ultimately again, will compromise the corpse dust and will not allow it to convey tumah. So too, again, once it's already corpse dust, introduction of foreign materials will prevent the corpse dust from conveying tumah. Now that I know that, Gabi Shalya my taima. Why is it that Rabbi Shimon holds that by the Shalya, ultimately again the Shalya is Tar, I'm Rabbi Yochanan Yishum Bittel Berov Naguba. Ultimately, I will say, what's happening over here? This is a din of Bittel Berov. That's what's happening over here. Look at Rashi Bittel Berov. Shadam Haleida Nisra Be'amichui. Because also we see that the blood of the birth, ultimately again, is greater in amount than the dissolved fetus. Umevato. So we'll say this is Shitas Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says halacha lemaisa. Ultimately, again, there was a vlad that was there, but the vlad dissolved, and therefore the vlad is batel berov in the rest of the blood of the shalya. Amara said the Gemara Siva Az Rabbi Yochanan Tamei. Rabbi say Rabbi Yochanan goes according to his logic. So remember again, this is Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, Amru Davar Echad. So Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov both said the same thing. Rabbi Shimon had the Amram. So Rabbi Shimon, we already said. Rabbi Lazar disanya. Rabbi Lazar stated as follows. Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov Omer, Behima Gasa, interesting case. Sheshafa Chararas Dam. So let's say if you have a large animal that expelled, it literally Charas, that means a cake of blood. Which I will say means it expelled a solid mass of blood. What's talacha? Harezu tikaber upetura min habechora. So I'll say, interesting enough, what do you have to do with that mass of blood? You have to bury it. So I'll say, just to give you the context over here, this is talking about a behema gasa that had never given birth before. So the first thing it is expelling, the patarechem, so to speak, is this cake of blood. So what's the shaila that we're dealing with? What's the status of that cake of blood? Is that a Vlad or is it something else? So the Gemara says over here as follows. What do you do with it? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, so harizuti kari, you have to bury it. Uputura min habechora. And any subsequent birth is not subject to the laws of Bechar. And Rabbi Elazar says, now what does that tell you? What does that tell you? Ultimately, again, it tells you it has to be buried. Why? Because we assume that that cake of blood is the dissolved Bechar animal. So therefore, it has to be buried because it has kedushas bechar, and therefore, again, bless you. Anything that comes after it is not subject to the din of bechar because actually, that cake of blood was the dissolved bechar animal. Rabbi Chia says, "So we'll say." And Rabbi Chia said that what? Ultimately, again, but it does not convey tumah. Neither through touching or through carrying. So I don't think Gemara says. Shabbos says that's interesting because but if halacha lemaisa, it doesn't convey tumah through maga and masa. That means what? That it's not a vlad. If it's not a vlad, then why does it have to be buried? In order to publicize the fact that the animal that comes after it is pater from bechar. So the Gemara says, Ama Vlad Ma'ayu. If that's the case, that it has to be buried, and you want to publicize that was the Petarechem. And therefore, Halacha Lemais, if it's the Petarechem, then it's a Vlad. If it's a Vlad, Va'amait Chanir Bichia, in the time, Lo Maga, Lo Masa. But say, again, this is circular logic. If it's a Vlad, you know, if you tell me it has to be buried, that means what? That means what? That it's a Vlad. If it's a Vlad, that means it's an animal. If it's an animal, then it should be subject to Tumah, Alts, Maga, and Masa. So you're telling me to bury it. Therefore, again, it has the status of a Vlad. It patters that which comes after it from Bechar. Yet you're telling me that it doesn't convey Tumah, B'maga, B'masa. Am Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Bitl, Barov, Naguba. I will say, because what's happening over here, ultimately, again, it is Batal Barov. So also, we'll have to stop over here for today. But what Rabbi Elazar seems to be saying is as follows. What Elazar ben Yaakov is saying is as follows. That when this behema gasa expels this cake of dried blood, we view that cake of dried blood as a vlad. As a vlad. Therefore what? It has to be buried because it has kedushas bechar. That which comes after it will not be a bechar. But yet, interestingly enough, it does not convey tumah b'maga u'b'masa. Why not? Because although it's a vlad, it is bottled barov in the rest of the blood. So on one hand, it's treated like a bechar, yet it will not convey tumah because it's bottled barov. Therefore, again, Abbas, you see, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is of the same opinion as Rabbi Shimon about this notion of bittel barov. Abbas, we'll pick up a B'yar Tzashem with this tomorrow.
Maybe I'm forgetting this, but the whole